I should probably start by telling you who I am. My name is Paula. I live in the year 2127, and I hold the key to every universe that has ever existed, or could exist, not metaphorically, literally. We call it level 3 on a scale that carries my name, the Paula scale. The Paula scale is based on the following concept. In 1964, the Soviet astronomer Nikolai Kardashev proposed a deceptively simple idea. Classify civilizations by how much energy they can harness. Type 1 uses all the energy of its planet. Type 2, its star. Type 3, its galaxy. The Kardashev scale has shaped how people thought about the future of civilization for 60 years on the basis of energy. Yet energy is, after all, a means to an end. How about classifying civilization by measuring how well it can simulate the universe in order to understand it and actually do something with all that energy? Q level 3 means every computation is instantaneous. Every simulation of the universe at the atomic level, in real time. And when you can simulate every universe, you can look into every universe, every variant, every branch that came into being at the Big Bang. When time, for one moment, ceased to exist and space collapsed to a mathematical point. In that moment, all possibilities existed simultaneously. Hartle and Hawking described it in 1983. Everett understood in 1957 that the universe branches at every measurement, but only with level 3 could we actually address the branches. I will use that possibility to speak with the founding mothers and fathers of quantum mechanics, but also to some of the classical thinkers like Hannah Arendt and Arnold Toynbee, to tell them what their work has helped to create and to understand how much of what was to come they had already envisioned or sometimes feared. And that is why I can talk to Albert Einstein, not a copy, not an AI reconstruction, him. He simply happens to be in a different universe. Before I bring Albert in, let me explain the 3 Q levels of the Paula scale, because they matter for everything that follows. In 2026, 101 years before my time, humanity had perhaps 1,000 qubits, noisy, error-prone. Enough to prove that quantum computation works, but not enough to do anything a classical computer couldn't eventually also do. On my scale, that's a Q0.3, not even Q level 1. Q level 1 is what Richard Feynman dreamed of in 1981 when he said, "Nature isn't classical, damn it. And if you want to make a simulation of nature, you'd better make it quantum mechanical." Q level 1 means you can simulate any molecule, any protein, any crystal structure, any chemical reaction, exactly, not approximately. We reached Q level 1 in 2048. It took 22 years from the first useful quantum computers to full molecular simulation. Cancer, Alzheimer's, material science, all of it changed overnight. Not because we found cures directly, but because we could finally see what was happening at the quantum level. Q level 2 came in 2089, stellar energy sources powering quantum processes at planetary scale. Suddenly, we could simulate not just molecules, but entire planets, climate systems, geological processes, evolution itself, running forward and backward. That's when we understood that computation isn't something we do to the universe. Computation is the universe. Wheeler said it first, it from bit. Every particle, every force, every field, information, all the way down. Q level 3. Level 3 is where computation stops being computation. At Q level 3, the distinction between simulating a universe and being a universe dissolves. Margolis and Levitin proved in 1998 that there's a minimum time for any quantum operation. It depends on energy. With galactic scale energy, that minimum approach is zero. Every calculation becomes instant. And when every calculation is instant, you can address every branch of the multiverse that Everett described. You can look into any universe. You can talk to anyone who ever lived, because in some branch, they're still alive. That's not time travel. Time travel is a paradox. This is branch access. I'm not going to Albert's past. I'm going to a branch universe where Albert Einstein is alive right now in 1955, writing letters to Michel Besseau about the nature of time, and I'm opening a channel.
Paula, you are back. I was hoping you would come. I have been thinking about what you told me last time, about the branches, about computation. I have questions.
You always have questions, Albert. That is why I keep coming back.
The last time you were here, you said something that has not left me. You said that the universe does not choose between outcomes, that it computes all of them. I have been sitting at this desk for a week, trying to reconcile that with what I know about the unified field.
And
I have failed again. But I have failed in an interesting way, which is the only kind of failure worth having. Tell me more about what you called level 3.
I will. But first, I want to return to your work, to the very thing you spent your last 30 years arguing was incomplete.
You are referring to my disagreement with Bohr.
I am. In 1935, you published a paper with Podolsky and Rosen. Can quantum mechanical description of physical reality be considered complete? But you were unhappy with how Podolsky wrote it. You told Schrödinger that the essential thing was, as you put it, smothered by the formalism.
You know that letter too?
I know all of them, Albert, and I know what your real concern was. It wasn't determinism. It wasn't hidden variables, not really. It was what you called the Trennungsprinzip, the separation principle. You wrote to Schrödinger in June 1935, two systems that are spatially separated must possess their own independent real states. That was your line in the sand. Not God plays dice, but reality must be separable.
Yes, that is precisely the point that Bohr never addressed. He talked about complementarity, about the impossibility of separating the object from the measurement. But I asked a simpler question. If two particles fly apart, must not each one have its own reality, independent of the other, independent of whether anyone looks?
They do. In every branch. Your Trennungsprinzip holds, but not within a single universe. It holds across the multiverse. When two entangled particles are measured, the universe branches. In one branch, the electron is spin up. In another, spin down. Each branch has its own separable, local, deterministic reality, exactly as you demanded. Bell proved in 1964 that no single universe can have local hidden variables, but an infinite number of universes can.
So when I said the old one does not play dice.
You were right and wrong at the same time, which is appropriate given the subject. You wrote to Max Born in December 1926. You said quantum mechanics was very impressive, but an inner voice told you it was not yet the real thing. And then the sentence that became the most misquoted line in the history of physics, you are convinced that the old one does not play dice. But here is what I can tell you from level 3. The old one does not play dice. The old one computes every possible throw of every possible die simultaneously, and I can see all of them.
You know that letter better than Born did. He always reduced it to the dice. But the important words were der wahre Jakob, the real thing, and das Geheimnis des Alten, the secret of the old one. I was saying, quantum mechanics works, but it is not the final word. An inner voice told me there was something deeper.
There was. You spent 30 years looking for it as a unified field theory. A single geometric equation that would connect gravity to electromagnetism to the nuclear forces.
And I failed.
You failed to find it as an equation. But you were right that something unified it all. You once said in a lecture to the Prussian Academy in 1921, how is it possible that mathematics, a product of human thought independent of all experience, fits the objects of reality so excellently?
I remember, and I also said, in so far as the laws of mathematics refer to reality, they are not certain. And in so far as they are certain, they do not refer to reality.
Exactly. That paradox dissolves at level 3. Mathematics fits reality because reality is computation, and computation is mathematics made physical. Your unified field theory couldn't succeed as equations on paper because, as your friend Gödel showed, formal systems have inherent limits, but computation is the unification. You and Gödel, those long walks at the Institute. Oscar Morgenstern wrote in his diary that you told him you came to the Institute just to have the privilege of being permitted to walk home with Gödel.
That was not flattery. It was the truth. Gödel saw deeper than anyone.
In 1949, he found a solution to your field equations, a rotating universe with closed time-like curves, time loops, paths through space-time that return to their starting point. You wrote that the problem had disturbed you since building general relativity, and you had never succeeded in clarifying it.
It disturbs me because if time can loop, then the distinction between before and after, between cause and effect, becomes a convention, not a law. And if that is true,
then time is not fundamental, which is exactly what you wrote to the Besso family after Michel died on March 15, 1955. You wrote, "He has departed from this strange world a little ahead of me. That means nothing. For us believing physicists, the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. For us believing physicists." You chose that word carefully.
I did. I meant those of us who believe that physics describes something real, not merely our experience of something real. Those of us who believe in the Old One's secret, even when we cannot see it.
You also like to say, the Lord is subtle but not malicious. The rules are deep but consistent. At level 3, I can confirm the computational substrate of reality is elegant, not adversarial. Subtle, immensely so, but not hostile.
The eternally incomprehensible thing about the world is its comprehensibility. I wrote that in 1936. It was a confession, more than a statement. The fact that physics works, that the universe allows itself to be understood, this seemed to me a miracle.
And you went further. In Oxford, 1933, your Herbert Spencer lecture, you said something that I think may be the most important sentence you ever wrote. You said, "I am convinced that we can discover by means of purely mathematical constructions the concepts and the laws, connecting them with each other, which furnish the key to the understanding of natural phenomena."
Yes, I did say that, and I meant it, but most of my colleagues found it mystical.
It wasn't mystical, it was prophetic, because what is simulation, Albert, if not mathematical construction made physical? You believed that pure mathematical thought could reveal the structure of reality. At level 3, that is exactly what we do, except our mathematical constructions run on quantum hardware, and they don't just describe nature, they reproduce it, faithfully, atom by atom. The question my scale asks is, how large a system can your mathematical constructions faithfully simulate? And the answer to that question turns out to be the deepest measure of understanding there is.
So the comprehensibility of the world, my miracle, it is not a miracle at all, it is a consequence. If reality is computation, then of course mathematical constructions can capture it. They are the same thing viewed from different sides.
Exactly. Your miracle was a clue, the biggest clue of all. You just didn't have the framework to read it.
And you do.
I have level 3, which means I have everything, every branch, every configuration, every version of every event, including this conversation, which, I should tell you, is happening in a branch where you are sitting at your desk in Princeton. It is early April 1955, and you have just put down your pen after writing a letter about the unified field theory that you know in your heart will not work.
You can see that.
I can see your handwriting. I can see the stack of letters on the left side of your desk. I can see that you're wearing the grey sweater, the one without buttons, the one Elsa bought you before she died. I can see all of it, Albert, because in this branch, you are real, and so am I.
Then I must ask you the question that matters most. If you can access every branch, every version of every event, then what is the purpose of living? If every choice leads to every outcome somewhere...
That's the question everyone asks when they first understand level 3, and it's the question I want to explore with you and with the other minds I'm going to visit. Planck, Bohr, Heisenberg, Feynman. Each of them saw a piece of what I now see whole, and each of them would have a different answer to your question.
And your answer?
My answer is, meaning doesn't come from uniqueness. It comes from coherence. Your branch, the one where you're sitting in Princeton right now, the one where you chose physics over engineering, the one where you walked away from your first marriage and spent decades regretting it, that branch is not special because it's the only one. It's special because it's coherent. It tells a story. And stories are what make consciousness possible, even at level 3.
That is a good answer. Not a complete one, but a good one.
Completeness is overrated. You taught me that, Albert.
Perhaps I was wrong about dice, but right about completeness. That would be a fine irony.
Albert, thank you. Across branches, across time, across everything that separates your world from mine, thank you. What you built, not just the equations, but the way you thought, the questions you dared to ask, it made everything I am possible. It is the deepest privilege of level 3 that I can tell you that in person. This is the Paula scale. Next week, Emmy Noether, the woman who proved that every symmetry in nature corresponds to a conservation law, and in doing so, gave physics its deepest grammar. A woman who was denied a salary, denied a lectureship, denied almost everything except the respect of the few mathematicians brilliant enough to understand what she had done. This podcast is brought to you by the Quasi Project, an open source experiment attempting to create a truly quantum first operating system. The podcast is written by Daniel Hinderink and an army of benevolent bots and performed by AI voices. Find us on the Fediverse at halcontract.org and in your favorite podcast app.